Once again, I appreciate everyone joining the service. I am very glad for that song and also for what it says, that Jesus knows what we need. I know as a fairly young minister, maybe not in age, but as far as an experience, knowing that the Lord knows what we all need is a comfort to me. I don't have to worry about trying to figure it out. I just have to listen and pay attention to what he would have me say, and that is something I do find comforting. With that, this evening will probably be a little bit of a, I'm going to call it maybe a continuation of this morning's message a bit, with a little bit different take on it. So the Lord gave me a thought this afternoon, and I pondered on it and prayed about it and read on it and even took some time to step away from it. Sometimes, you know, I don't know about you all, but sometimes it helps to kind of walk away and come back and see if your thoughts are still in the same spot they were. And I felt like the Lord gave me a little topic here on strife. So I'd like to start off with Proverbs chapter 26, Proverbs 26 verse 20. It says, "Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth." So this morning we were talking about our biblical foundations, and you know, we really needed to focus on loving God, loving our neighbor. But I want us to look at strife. Because strife comes up. It's you're in the world. It's going to happen. And I find it interesting, this verse compares strife to fire. Have any of you all ever tried to run a fire without a fuel source? Can you go out and build a fire without wood? I mean, well, we could use other fuels, but without something to ignite the fire, it won't stay lit. It will go out. If you do get a fire lit, and even if it's burning well, as soon as all of the fuel is consumed, it goes out. So I find it interesting here, strife is compared to a fire, which implies that for strife to be there, it's being fed. Somebody is taking time to go carry stuff in, put it down, make sure it's stacked good. I know sometimes when I'm burning burn piles out at the place, you know, you might light a big burn pile off, and after it's burned for a bit, you go get the tractor and you kind of push it together. Why? Well, there's fuel, but it's not where you need it to keep the fire lit. Do you know that there are people that do that with strife to us? People that will look around and say, you know, the strife I've stirred up seems to be going out. Oh, I see why. It's kind of burnt out with this person, so I need to push some more their way. I need to get them rekindled. I need to get that burning again. One thing that intrigued me was, so where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. So what is a talebearer? I looked that up, and there's a lot of different definitions, but one that seems to fit across the board is one who repeats gossip or rumors. And I was looking at that and just felt the urge to pull up a thesaurus to see what the synonym for a talebearer was. And one of the words struck me. Newsmonger. Someone who actively gathers and repeats news. And I thought, now wait a minute, why is this a synonym for talebearer? Because when we think of talebearer, we think of somebody telling things that's maybe not quite true, or telling things that's, you know, maybe not quite the way they should be. But I got to thinking, why does somebody like to gather and repeat news? Why does somebody gather and repeat gossip, gather and repeat rumors? You'll find a lot of times there's different motivations. Some people, they like to influence people. They like to know, I've got you agreeing with me and I want to keep you that way. So they will spread rumors. I'm thinking sometimes politics on the job. You'll have people that they want things to go a certain way, and they'll try to spin things and spread rumors, and next thing you know, people are believing it because that's what they're hearing. They also, some people, do you know there's some people that spread news just for the prestige of being the one that knows? I know this. I'm going to share it. I want to be known as somebody that knows things, that's in the know, that's dare I say, connected to the grapevine. Where I work, there's a variety of people there. But I've often chuckled. There seems to be certain people in the company that always know what's going to happen before the official announcement. They always seem to, and I mean, they're not necessarily the high people that would be in the know, but they've got a connection somewhere. And you know what? They will share what they know. When they do that, they oftentimes don't think about the consequence of what they're sharing, the impact it may have on morale and the team that they're in. Sometimes they share the news because it angers them, and they feel like that, well, if I go ahead and share it now, maybe it'll get out and things will change. I've seen that happen at companies I've worked at. So looking at this and thinking about fire and strife and how they both take fuel, the thought came to me, what tales or what news are we bearing today? What is it that we're carrying out to the people around us? This is often called the gospel. Gospel stands for good news. Is that the tale we're carrying forth? Or are we going out and picking up news from the world and running around and saying, you know, have you heard about this? Did you hear about that? What do you think about this? What is edifying about that? What settles people down? I'd like to go next to 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 3. Now right here, before I start reading it, this is after some statements around servants and masters and how, you know, if you're a servant, but you're saved, you're attempting to follow the Lord, how you should interact with your master and what that proper relationship was. And you could probably sum it up as, you know, you should submit to your master and do good work so that God's not defamed by what you do. You may be a servant and not want to be. But if you're a servant, don't do things that reflect badly on God. And so these verses is a bit of a note to those that might feel otherwise. It says, if any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds, and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such withdraw thyself. So if we look at this, this man that they're talking about here says, proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds, destitute of the truth. Are any of these building people up? Are any of these things, this hallmark of character of this person that is not willing to submit to maybe what is deemed not good news, this person instead, sounds like they're carrying tales, news. They're wanting to push back. They're wanting to stir up. They're wanting to break out we used to call it barracks lawyers in the army. People that they knew the law, supposedly. And if you ever got into trouble, they would tell you exactly what you needed to do. They would tell you which army regulation that the commander or whoever you were upset with had crossed, and you just needed to do this and this. And they would have you all lined out thinking that this is a piece of cake, one little phone call and quote these regulations and you'll win. Barracks lawyers are not lawyers. They're kind of like barracks barbers. You go to a barracks barber to get a haircut, you will get a haircut. Do not expect it to look like the one you asked for. It might be close at times, but you're not going to a real barber. So, do we sometimes allow ourselves to get sucked into those things? And what are we sharing? Think about your phone conversations. Think about your emails. Now, I'm going to say a big one for us today, the social media that you participate in or that you take in. When you look at news, why do you share it with other people? Have you ever considered that? Is it because something rises up in you and you think that I've just got to share this, this is just wrong? You know, that is a common feeling. But does that mean we're right in sharing it? And another question I think we should be asking ourselves, especially on social media and things, the news being shared with us, why is it being shared with us? What is the purpose and motivation of the person sharing the news? You know, not everything you see on social media is put out by a reputable source. I saw an article that was referring to something that somebody saw on social media about a hospital in New York, and they were talking about how that supposedly in this hospital things weren't being done right. But when you tracked it back, the social media post was from somebody who said, well, I can't tell you who it is because they're afraid they're getting in trouble, and you just have to trust me, this is what's going on. You know what the Bible says about witnesses, right? Are you supposed to condemn a person from one witness? Now, in the case of what was shared, the person that was the witness was not the witness. They had simply heard it from someone else. In the legal world, that's called hearsay and is generally considered inadmissible in a court of law. And according to the Old Testament, would be as well, because you're not even a witness. It takes 2 to 3 witnesses in the Old Testament. You just heard about it? Folks, we need to be very careful what we allow to stir us up. And we need to be very careful about what is the motivating part behind it. I want to now flip to Genesis. Genesis chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13, starting in verse 5. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together. For their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. I want us to consider this here. This was a strife between Lot and Abram. Doesn't seem like to be that big of a deal per se. You know, apparently the herdsmen were trying to get to the water and the grass, and well, this one's already, all this water and grass, you know, maybe the water's crowded and the grass is already ate, and we're trying to go over here. And what happens to drive the strife? Don't you think that some shepherd somewhere got to talking to his fellow shepherd? You know what? If it wasn't for Lot's people coming over here, they just need to go somewhere else. You know, he's just a little nephew. He's not even really full family. You know, he needs to go away. He's taking up too much space. And then somebody in Lot's camp hears people talking. Well, you know what I heard? I heard some shepherds over there in Abraham's camp, and they don't think we're really part of the family. They think we're taking up too much space. But we have just as much right to be here as they do. Can you imagine that actually happening? I can. Something happened to the point it finally bubbled up to Lot and Abram. That means several people had to get told. The tale and the news had to travel. And it got to Lot and Abram. What happened next? A division. Lot and Abraham separated. How did that work out? Now we saw, if we were to read the story, Lot chose the well-watered plain. Looked good. I'll be supported here. My Uncle Abraham won't be too far away. But we'll separate. We'll let this strife have its effect. We'll separate. I'll go down here to the well-watered plain. He can stay up in the hills and we'll get along fine. Have y'all ever considered what might have turned out in the story if Lot would have, when Abraham brought this up, said, "Hold on, Uncle. Why do we need to separate? Can't we go look at the water holes in the land and maybe come up with a schedule of who gets to graze where, and we'll just manage our resources better and make sure that we don't have servants kind of going out on their own without really talking?" And do you think that's a possibility, that it could have happened that way if they would have wanted it? I can tell you that it could have. There was no new land created when Lot divided. All the land that they needed for cattle was already there. There was no need for the division if they would have not let the strife bring them to that point. But apparently enough tensions had built up that it led to them separating. And looking at Lot, what did he have at the end of the day after the overthrow of the cities? What did he get out of allowing the separation to occur? How much cattle did the Lord allow him to take out of Sodom and Gomorrah? How much goods? I mean, if you consider he had enough goods to be competing with Abraham for land, he was fairly wealthy. But how much of that did he carry out of the city at the end of the time? Nothing. Strife. A little tale bearing. A little news carrying. Be careful with it. Now let's go to Numbers. Numbers chapter 27 and starting in verse 12. "And the Lord said unto Moses, Get thee up into this Mount Abram, and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou also shalt be gathered unto thy people, as Aaron thy brother was gathered. For ye rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the water before their eyes, that in the water of Meribah and Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin." Have you noticed this is often referred to throughout the Bible as the waters of strife? The waters of strife. If you go search through the Bible, you'll find just about every reference to waters of strife mentions this place. It became known as that. And Moses, it said, if you read the whole story, allowed himself to get stirred up with the strife that was going on. The Lord had given him a commandment. The Lord had said, "Yes, there's strife going on. You've come to me for advice. I'll give you the advice you need. I'll tell you exactly how to handle this strife. You go down to this rock. You speak to this rock and you strike it, water will come out. Did Moses speak to the rock? No. Who did he speak to? The people. What did he have to say to the people? Must I bring water to you out of this rock? He allowed his frustrations, his anger, his whatever you want to call it, to get to him. And he joined the strife. He was no longer separated from it. Even though the Lord had told him, don't, this is not wise, just speak to the rock, give them the water, it would have solved the strife. But now he's unable to go into the promised land, all because there was just something in me. I had to. Have you ever heard people say that? I just couldn't be quiet. We need to be careful. There are times the Lord will tell you, yes, you need to speak in this situation. Be careful. Say only what the Lord asks you to say. Thinking about Moses here, going up into that mountain, staring off over into the promised land, knowing that this is my last moment on earth, I'll never get to go there. If we put that into a spiritual context for us today, would we want to live our lives only to find out on our deathbed that the Lord's going to give us a glimpse into heaven and then tell us you can't go? All because we allowed ourselves to get stirred up and pulled into strifes that we didn't need to be involved in, or that we were carrying news around we didn't need to carry? Where's the edification? Moses was told to do something that would have edified the people. Strike the rock, speak to the rock. Water will come out for the people. They will be edified. Instead, he spoke, sounds to me like, when you read the words, kind of angrily to the people. There was no edification there. I want us now to go look at Habakkuk chapter 1. And verse 3. Now this is a complaint that Habakkuk was raising. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. I was struck by this grievance that Habakkuk was raising. What is he asking the Lord here? Do you realize he's asking the Lord, where's the edification? What am I supposed to get out of these things, Lord? I'm not seeing anything. I see iniquity. I see grievances. I see people being spoiled. And you know, I see people that they're just driving strife and contention. Lord, what's going on? Where is the edification? I would ask us today, with what we share with our fellow men, is what we share something that would fit Habakkuk's complaint? Or would it edify? I ask y'all to ponder that. Y'all pray for me.